And now, ladies and gentlemen, one of our continent's eminent voiceover artists, Chilulemba, the voiceover plug.
On the voiceover plug this week, a man who I've been trying to get a hold of for a while. We've been speaking about getting him on the voiceover plug for a number of reasons. I think this gentleman will shed some light, across the topics that we usually handle on the voiceover plug. Number one, he's a voiceover artist himself. Number two, he runs Big Mouth, which is a production facility that has a whole lot of traffic with voiceover artists coming in and out, producers coming in and out, directors coming in and out. So he'll know a lot regarding that. And then also, he's the founder of voiceme.co.za, which is a platform that voiceover artists use. If I've got any of those facts wrong, he will slap me as we go, but I think I'm good. Ladies and gentlemen, on the voiceover plug this week is Andrew Sutherland.
Thanks, Chile. That's all correct, 100%.
tick, tick.
Glad to be here.
All right, so let's start off with this. In episode one of the podcast, I had kind of like an overview of how one can get started. And usually the advice that we give to people who are interested is, your starting point should be your demo, because the way that you speak conversationally or even when you meet somebody in person is different from how they sound once it's recorded. But then that being said, I still get people asking me the same question, so I might be missing something. What's your view? Like, if somebody wants to get started, what should they be looking to do?
I think demos should be kind of the second step. I think first step, especially if someone hasn't done voice at all before, is to definitely seek training and coaching first. If you just jump in and do demos, I mean, that's fine, but you're not going to know what you're really doing. You're just going to be speaking, which could work for you if you have natural talent, but most people need a little bit of help and a lot of direction, especially in the early days. So I would say step one, seek training and coaching, work with a coach 3 to 6 months at least. Mm. And when they think that you're ready for demos, then you go and you spend that money on getting demos recorded. Because if you invest in demos from the beginning and 3 months later, 6 months later, you know, your voice has changed, you've gotten better, you can perform better, the demos that you recorded up front have just been a bit of a waste of money. Yeah. Rather take that money, put it into coaching first, and then later on, when you're ready, do your demo recordings.
I love what you're saying. And then that leads me to another thought. In South Africa, the coaching culture might not be as big as, say, in the U.S.
Absolutely.
Where in the U.S., there's so many names that get thrown around of people that are renowned, good coaches. In SA, it's very rare that you come across names where people will be like, this guy's a good coach, that guy's a good coach, and he's got a program where he has done it with a system where you can pay that much, you know, per month according to their rates, etc. So maybe you can shed light, like, are there coaches in SA, and then also Spanner in the works, voiceover plug also, I suppose, has an audience outside of South Africa, but in the rest of the continent. So maybe just some thoughts that you have around that.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. So Craig Ross runs a company called Savoa, the South African Voiceover Academy. Mm. And that would be definitely someone I'd recommend to get started in coaching. So they're pretty formalized at the moment. They have coaching in, I think, 4 or 5 cities around the country. They've got coaches in all places. And his program is fantastic. He's got something that they call a booth camp, where it's a weekend. It's kind of 4 or 5 hours per day on a Saturday and a Sunday. You come in, it's a group class. He coaches, trains. You get a lot of mic time, and you learn a lot in those classes. I mean, I remember going to my first one about 5 or 6 years ago, thinking, oh man, I'm the only one here that's actually done any voice.
Yeah.
I'm just doing this as a kind of for interest thing. And Craig made me work like you cannot believe. He really pushed. I mean, he knew what I could do. And I learned, as someone who kind of been doing voice already for about 5 or 6 years, probably more about my voice than the guys that had never done anything, that had been there for their first time. I learned a lot on that. So I'd highly recommend Savoa as a kind of a go-to first step place. Mm. He does do one-on-one classes online as well. So he's kind of got it all covered. And, you know, despite him being based down at the coast, you know, he does do these training sessions
super
all over the place.
Yeah. And instinctively, I'm kind of thinking that it might not be, because there are a lot of coaches in the US, and the way that the industry there operates compared to ours is different. The kind of reads that I hear coming from US artists on their showreels and stuff is quite different from what guys do in markets here in Africa. So I'm thinking that it might not be in your best interest, unless you're looking to get into that market, to get a coach online from the States, or am I wrong?
I don't think any coaching would be a bad idea.
Okay.
I do think that if you are trying to get more international work, then working with an international coach would definitely help, because they'll have more information and kind of know the trends that are happening in their own countries or regions. But yes, I agree. The voiceover styles that we see here, at least in South Africa, I haven't really experienced much outside of South Africa as far as our continent goes. Mm. But our styles still here are still quite narrator or announcer heavy.
Yeah.
And in the States and a lot of Europe, it's definitely more casual, conversational, natural. Mm. And it's been that way for a long time. Now, that said, you know, those kind of styles are still popular here. But what I find here anyway is that our local artists are still in that kind of announcer narrator zone. And even for my own voice work, I do a lot in corporate, and that's the kind of style the corporates are asking for here, at least. Whereas the occasional jobs that I've done for overseas clients, they want that more natural conversational style. So conversational is definitely not going anywhere. It's going to be around for years to come. It's definitely the most popular thing, because it's, you know, it's human beings.
And at the end of the day, the most impactful advertising is advertising that represents just a connection, a human-to-human connection.
Absolutely.
So I suppose that's why the conversational style is like gold, in a sense. Now, you get like a lot of traffic, as I mentioned, of voice artists like me and whoever else coming here on a weekly, sometimes daily basis. And you also have clients who sit in these recordings. From what you kind of experience being in those sessions, what are advertisers looking for? You know, if somebody's looking to get into the industry and is trying to figure out, like, once I'm in there, what will help me to be successful in sessions or get repeat business because they like what I did? What are some of the thoughts that come to your mind?
So there's a few things that you should consider. I think just being a general personable person.
Yeah.
Being likable is a good start. Like, don't be a diva when you come into the studio.
Yeah.
Like,
I thought you were going to use a different D word. But diva works.
Diva work, but with the intention of the other.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just be a good, nice person and, you know, build that relationship with the clients that are booking you. And I mean, even outside of the studio, when you're doing your marketing to clients, you know, be a person, be a nice person, connect with them, you know, just be a good guy
or
good girl and whatever your case may be.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I think that goes a long way, because even if the session is like a complicated one and things don't go well, if you're nice about it, they're not going to think badly of you necessarily, unless you like really mess up, in which case, you know,
yeah,
there's a number of factors for that, but that would be my advice. I think just be nice.
Yeah.
As far as the performance goes, it's like, learn to take direction and take notes from the director well. You know, practice your craft. You know, do your reads at home when you're practicing, or if you're working with a coach, even better. Mm. You know, learn how to change your voice. Learn your instrument as such. You know, like, the more versatile that you can be and the easier and quicker you can take direction and change your read, the better it is going to be for you in session.
Yeah.
So if someone wants you to sound more friendly, you need to know how to do that. You know,
exactly.
Put a smile on your face.
Exactly.
If they need you to, you know, add more sell into the read, then, you know how to do it. So performance aside, you know, that comes from practice and working with coaches and doing the thing. I think that's really all you need to do. Just build good relationships with the studios and the engineers and the clients that book you.
I'm going to tell you a quick story because I always also add punctuality in the mix, which absolutely. I suppose is a given for anything in life where you're looking to be successful. There's a time when back in the day, I think it was like maybe 2005 or so, somebody was late for a session for Hi-Fi Corp. It was a Hi-Fi Corp voiceover, and it was happening at Adam Lomas' studio. And for some reason, somebody in the studio, I'm assuming it's Adam, said Chilu would be like, you know, a good option for this, and they were in a fix. So they called me, and I went to that session, and then I became the Hi-Fi Corp voice for like the next 10 years or something. And, you know, one guy being late, I'm just emphasizing how punctuality is an important factor. And I say that it's a nice story to tell. And I'm looking at you and thinking, but I was late for a session last year with you. And you bought some time for me.
The one time in 15, 18 years we've been working together.
But you see, that's how I even remember
it. We can let that slide.
All right. Now, the other thing that a lot of people, when they hear that you're a voiceover artist, instinctively, they'll think radio, TV, whereas there are other avenues of voice that are still maybe not as, in the spotlight, not as glamorous. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But still are in the pocket of, you know, being a voiceover artist. So maybe you could help share some of those areas, some of those avenues.
Sure. So, I mean, despite the broadcast stuff, which you've mentioned, radio, TV, you know, there's online social media advertising. Yeah. I mean, those are the really obvious ones that people are exposed to every day. On the other side of that, there's the kind of corporate side, the internal communications, the training videos, explainer videos, onboarding AVs, safety videos. You know, that's the corporate kind of side of things. Then you get the really obscure things like the voice for a little toy on the shelf that, you know, makes a voice
when you squeeze it.
That's still a voiceover. Someone recorded that. Someone got paid for that work, and then they put it into a little computer chip, and when you squeeze the button, it makes that voice.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really obscure one that people don't often think about, but you know, voiceover is everywhere.
Mind the gap.
In your elevators, you know, like there's little voices everywhere. I challenge everyone to go out and start counting from the moment you wake up how many voices you hear in a 24-hour period, and I guarantee you'll be past 100 by midday.
There's a time, like a quick story. When I was still with Intertalent as my agent, there was an opportunity for, I think it was like Riot Police or something. They needed a voiceover for when there's like a riot situation and then, you know, that voice that's, you know, move back or whatever. Yeah. They play that on the loud halo or whatever. So they reached out to Intertalent, and somehow I was shortlisted. Then Mandy called me and said, from her thinking, based on how my voice is positioned, she thinks it'll be a bad choice if I do that because it's authoritative, yes, but then the context of which it will play might not be a good thing. And we had this whole discussion, and she said, no, it's up to you, but like, well, you know, what's your feeling? And at that point, you know, I used to usually just default to her wisdom, and I understood where she was coming from. But even that's just an example of where a voice would sit, where you wouldn't expect voiceover to be involved in that scenario.
Public location, public service announcements, that kind of thing.
So
I was going to say, you know, like, also, it depends. You know, you never have to take a voiceover job if it clashes with what you believe in. You know, like,
exactly.
You know, like, for example, if you didn't want your voice associated with Riot Police, you should turn that down.
Yeah.
Like, but if you don't care, then, you know, why not? It'd be ongoing, usage for years to come. Could be quite profitable.
Exactly. As long as there are riots, you're going to be doing well. I was going to give you another example, but then, you know, I'm not too sure in terms of NDA, but it was to do with a famous South African iconic individual. Maybe that'll be how I frame it. And he was obviously going to at some point pass on because he was like in his 90s, and that probably is enough hint for you. And there's a radio station that had, you know, those voice clips, which are like memorial or tribute voice clips, which were going to air once the individual passed on. And the deal was that for each year that the voice is on their system, but the gentleman is still alive, you get a royalty, you know, and then once, you know, the individual passes on, then they'll air those, and then, you know, each year those things were on standby, you'd get a check. And so they had a guy who had recorded those. It wasn't me. And each year he was getting paid, you know, because said iconic legendary person was still alive. And then a year before said iconic person passed on, they called me and said, okay, we can't keep that dude's voice on the system because now he's working for a different radio station. So can you re-record these things? And the deal we have is that for each year that the gentleman is alive, we'll give you a check for, you know, for usage and royalties. I'm like, cool. And as soon as I recorded them that year, he passed on. So,
well,
blame me for killing him.
You got paid for what it got used for.
Exactly. Just 1 year usage. Yeah. And yeah, no, it worked out. Now we're talking about different use case scenarios. In South Africa, there's some, I suppose, types of voiceovers that aren't common, but I could be mistaken. One of them, which a lot of people want to do, is animation. Like, my dream is to do stuff for an animated series or like a blockbuster. But that doesn't exist, as far as I know, in a strong way here in Africa, right?
I don't think the kind of productions that people are expecting to get, like, everyone wants to be a Disney princess or a Disney prince. But those kind of productions, you know, they're done in the States. And although, you know, those companies are diversifying their actor portfolio and they're bringing in more African actors every now and again, they're still hiring the guys that are based in Hollywood or New York or Chicago and those big areas to do those. So unless you're based there, it's not likely you're going to get cast.
Yeah.
However, there's nothing stopping you from auditioning on those jobs, or if you get the brief from an agent to audition on them. I would just say curb your expectations, because there's probably thousands of people auditioning for those, and you know, you're just one.
Exactly.
And not a lot of the local guys are producing those kind of animated films. There are a few, but it's not a really big space here, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. And from my understanding also, I mean, like, you've touched on it already, from discussions that are, because I've just, you know, on the record, I don't have ambitions to be a Disney prince, you know.
Why not?
You know, it could happen at some point. But then, like you say, if I were to pursue that, I'd have to actively possibly uproot myself and position myself elsewhere, in order to compete for those opportunities, which is not, you know, currently in my headspace. But the listening to producers and directors of those kind of shows and those kind of productions on Clubhouse and platforms like that, they will tell you that most times those voiceover sessions have to be done in person. So even if you have ISDN, Source Connect or whatever, usually they don't use those platforms for those specific type of productions.
At least not for the initial recordings or the main things. I mean, I've done a couple of things where some of the actors have been here in South Africa on holiday, and we've done ADR or just a couple of remote sessions just to replace stuff that has been done previously.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And that's a little different, because it's already been done and they're just changing a line or two.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the main initial recording session, and those are usually booked in days or weeks or months, you're gonna be in there with a director, with other actors in this huge multiple booth setup where you're playing with each other, you're acting with each other in the booth and with the reference video there in front of you on a big TV and kind of possibly even doing some motion capture for the character as well in some cases, especially if you're talking about video games. There's a lot of stuff that, especially these days where there's a lot of cutscenes and more high-end 3D renderings of characters that, you know, as an actor will go there, you might be voicing it, but you'll also be acting those scenes. You'll be motion captured as a soldier running through a battlefield, you know, shouting your lines.
Yeah.
You might ADR that later as well, just to replace the audio for clarity, but you're going to be physically doing the work of the actor as well.
So you need to be in.
So there's a, So you need to be there at their studio, and those setups are massive.
Yeah. A couple more questions. One is to do with audiobooks. Now, audiobooks also not so big in Africa, but you've been involved both on the production side and the narration side of audiobooks.
Yes, but only for my own voice. And for budget reasons, that's the only reason I got the job, because the rate that was discussed and, you know, pitched to me, I would not be able to hire an external voice to come in and record that.
Yeah.
And cover studio time and all of it, because the rate was quite low. And at least by South African
standard
rates, guideline standards, it's quite low. So I've done three. It's a long, very long process. And especially if you're doing the narration and you're doing the editing and you're doing the mastering and all of the pickups and, you know, having 20 characters in your head that you're trying to have to keep consistent through 10, 12 hours of recorded book.
Yeah.
It becomes quite tedious. So it's a long process. But, you know, audiobooks are getting more popular. It's a little bit difficult to get into that side of things, just because the main distributor of audiobooks, which is Amazon or Audible, they have a website called ACX, which connects authors with narrators. But you have to be registered as a taxpayer in the US or the UK in order to be on the system, which excludes pretty much everywhere else.
Yeah.
So as a South African narrator, you're not going to be able to register on ACX. However, that should not stop you from marketing out to contacts and publishing houses and stuff and saying, hey, I'd like to do audiobooks. Here's a sample of my work.
Yeah.
They can still hire you directly, which is what happened in my case. I got contacted directly from a guy from Amazon that wanted to voice a South African title, and he offered me a budget, which I said was impossible at first.
Yeah.
And then I said, the only way this is going to happen is if I read it and edit it and do all the work. Then it's still low, but it's doable. And that's how I got it. And then you invoice them directly and you bypass the whole ACX platform.
I was going to say, like, I did one audiobook last year, and it's like really exactly as you've described it. It's a lot of work. And the other loophole we found is a website called Findaway Voices. So they're like a distributor that then feeds into ACX and all these other platforms. Similar to how if you're doing music, TuneCore or what's the other one? CD Baby and all these other platforms.
It's like a port forwarder to another platform.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Okay, interesting. Then there's what I mentioned earlier on, VoiceMe, which you founded. I remember when you were doing beta testing and all that kind of stuff, and it's live and it's, you know, making people, connecting clients to voiceover artists, and it's doing its thing. Maybe you can tell me a bit about the journey of VoiceMe and where it's at.
Right. So we launched officially to the public in August 2019. Unfortunately, only a few months before COVID hit. So that timing was not great for launch. But anyway, we did it anyway. But the process actually started way back in 2015. And we were in development of the site for, you know, 4 years before we actually launched it out. And it went through a lot of changes during that time before we got to what we have now. And essentially the idea behind it was to create a platform where voice artists can connect with clients, or clients can connect with voice artists and be found. And as part of all that, we integrated a studio profile into it. We integrate an agent profile, so that talent that were represented by agents locally could connect and link with their agent. And then those agents would be the point of contact for the clients as well. So it's not stepping on anyone's shoes. The agents are happy. The artists are happy. You know, the studios get integrated as well. They can get bookings through the project system. But it was a long process and quite an expensive one to get the site to where it is. But it is working, and people are getting gigs off the site. And what I like about it was never built to make money for me, really.
Really?
It was, well, I mean, money's always nice, it was built as a tool to help all of us as voice artists to connect with clients easier, or to help connect with clients.
Yeah.
And the way we've designed it is that the site doesn't take any commission or money for the jobs that you do on the site, like some other international casting sites out there.
Yeah, yeah.
We just make the connection, and then you as the artist kind of own that connection with your client. Mm. So we just matchmake, and then after that, it's up to you guys to discuss rates and budgets and what's being used for. And you can build that relationship with your client and own that client and kind of keep growing your business as a voice. So we don't want to be involved in any of that. We just, you know, are the matchmaker.
What's interesting about the journey, and I'd imagine how much work goes into it, because you've got the platform which you're building, which is built and so on. So you've got, like, you know, the technical side of things, but there's also the relationship thing where you have to, I'm assuming, explain to each agency, because you're buddies with any agent that exists in the country. So explaining to them that, you know, you're not a threat to them, but you're complimentary. There's a lot of that work as well that I'm sure you had to.
There was a lot of that going along before launch.
Mm.
And when we were in development, we were in touch with a lot of the kind of top agents to discuss what they would like out of the platform and what works for them, what doesn't work for them. And we definitely stepped on a few toes in the early days, but that was quite easily rectified and corrected. And, you know, everyone was happy by the time we launched. Pre-launch, you know, 6 months before we launched, when we were still doing final kind of beta testing, you know, we sent out surveys to the agents and made sure that everyone was happy with the way it was and how it functioned. So, yeah, there was quite a bit of discussion happening and testing with lots of people before we launched.
I know before this, I told you that I wanted to chat AI, but I think we can flag that and do that rain check and do that on a different time. But what I wanted to do now is to kind of go back to the beginning of this conversation, where you said the first step is to get some coaching. Second step is then to do your demo. Would you then say the third step, potentially, especially if you're independent, would be then sign up to VoiceMe?
In South Africa, it would definitely be another tool in your marketing kit. VoiceMe is passive, so you'll set up a profile, you'll load your clips on, and then when clients search on the site and you match the criteria that's being searched for, they will have the opportunity to connect with you via your contact information, whether that's yourself or your agent's links, and then book you for a job or request a quote from you or request a sample clip if they haven't found something quite right on your profile, but they heard something that they liked, maybe, but it wasn't quite right, and they just want to make sure. So, you know, like all casting sites are kind of passive marketing tools. You have your demos, they sit there, and then you wait to be contacted by the client. I would say it's just another tool.
Yeah.
You can't stop direct marketing to your clients. You need to be able to build your business from other avenues as well. So reaching out to clients directly, researching, you know, who you should want to work with.
Yeah.
And reaching out to those guys and say, hey, I'm a voice actor. I do this. Here's a sample of my work. You know, that is always going to go down well with those clients, like having that personal relationship.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, when you're getting cast through a casting site, it's not personal yet. But once the connection is made, it's up to the artist to make it personal.
Yeah.
And so it's just another tool. And that's across the board, all casting sites, all the big international ones. Doesn't matter what casting site you're on, it's always going to be passive.
Yeah.
None of those sites are actively marketing each individual voice. It's impossible.
Mm. Yeah.
They just provide a contact point.
Yeah.
So I would say in combination with those sites, you need to be reaching out to clients that you want to work with.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying to some of the guys that were in the studio earlier, I reached out to a German client years ago because I saw a corporate video and I saw that they'd produced it. And I was like, hey, it doesn't matter that they're in Germany, but I could definitely do that kind of narration. And I reached out to trawled LinkedIn and their social media feeds for contacts, eventually found the right person, reached out to them with a mail, sent them a sample, and crickets
for years.
Yeah.
And I was checking in with them every 3 to 6 months, just touching base, like, hey, I'm still here. I'm available if you need me. You know, corporate neutral English voice.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want an American, I'm your guy.
Yeah.
If you don't want a British guy, I'm your guy.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you don't want an Australian, I'm your guy. Like, I can sound like any of those.
But my
natural voice is kind of in the middle.
Exactly.
And after almost 3 years, eventually got a mail back from the guy saying, hey, we've got this project that you'd be perfect for. We're looking for a global neutral accent.
Yeah.
And we'd like to use you. And it turned out to be a very lucrative job
that's fantastic.
Still ongoing today. And we've done multiple sessions and multiple recordings for this client, and it's been very well paid.
You see what I like about that is there sometimes when I notice, because say for instance, I've got my website and, you know, I do my own low key marketing. The ones that I'm maybe it's just because of personality, I find a bit strange are the ones where you'll see a little JPEG with a Chilulemba voice artist book me. You know, I find those, you know, I don't know how I feel about them, but I like what you're describing there, where you're being proactive. But it's also very targeted. You know your market. Say for instance, maybe this is me clarifying my own point in my head as I talk to you. If I put that card on my Facebook, which has like 40 whatever thousand people, most of those guys have no booking power. Maybe they might tell a friend who tells a friend, but that's not really the crowd that will be targeting if I'm to get bookings. But if I do my research, if I start finding out who the people are that are in the decision-making positions and then target those guys in a clever way, then that to me makes more sense.
Absolutely. I mean, I like using LinkedIn because it's a bit more professional and also because you can really narrow down who you're looking for. You can look by job type or job title rather.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're looking for a company that does e-learning and you look up, for example, like e-learning designer or instructional designer or educational content writer, it doesn't matter what these things are, you can narrow it down and you can, instead of finding companies details, you can find people.
Yeah.
And if you connect with the person, it's much easier to make that relationship start and get that opportunity going if you start that connecting with the right person.
Yeah.
So it's really important to kind of be yourself and be friendly and connect with them on kind of on their terms. Like when you're connecting with them, especially if you're connecting to them out of the blue, you know, you want to make that connection about them.
Mm.
You know, it's like you don't want to say, hey, I'm Andrew and I'm a voice actor. I'm this and I'm this and I can do all these things for you. Yes, you can do all those things, but they don't care yet.
They want the value.
They want to know what you bring to the table for them.
Yeah,
so what I like to do is if I find someone on LinkedIn, as I go through their social media, I'll see what they've posted. They've posted something cool. I'll reach out to them, not selling any service. I was like, hey, person A, I really like what you did with this particular production.
Yeah.
You know, let's chat time sometime and let me see if we can, you know, do something together. And I don't mention voiceover. I don't mention what I do. I said, they can
search that.
They can search that. Yeah. They can look on my profile and they can see Andrew Sullivan, audio engineer, voice actor, whatever. They can look at it.
Yeah.
But I don't sell myself, especially on that first connect.
Yeah.
Once they've replied and they said, hey, we'd love to, you know, chat and see what we can, that's when you can say, cool, well, this is what I offer. These are my services. This is how quick I can turn around voices and whatever.
Yeah.
And if you make that connection about them and what they need, not what you can supply, it definitely goes a long way to building that trust, because then they feel valued as the person that is in the relationship. At that point, it doesn't matter what you can do. It's like, if they feel valued, you're already way ahead of the next guy that's just blasted them with samples and, you know, selling and selling, because no one wants to be sold stuff like that.
Exactly.
So
it's very insightful. This last thing I want to do now is not even a question, and we're recording this episode at Big Mouth Studios, which is your studio. It's a fantastic facility. I've been coming here for many years, but also just to acknowledge that this is the same venue where when we said we wanted to gather as the voiceover industry, remember, was it 2 years ago?
And it's much longer than that.
Really? Oh, yeah. No, it's probably like, because
probably about
COVID.
5 years ago.
July. 2018, maybe.
Could be.
Yeah, which is five years ago. Damn, man. I thought it was more recent. But I mean, in this space, on an evening, we had like veterans and newbies and whatnot. And you hosted this. But not only that, because I'm just trying to make the point that you're an important cog in this industry. You're, on Facebook, when there's Zansi voiceover peeps and guys have questions, you're there answering and you know, putting some insights and shedding light on different things that people have queries about. So just to appreciate that, man, you're doing as they say in a certain community, you're doing the Lord's work.
Thank you very much.
Even I come to you like pretty frequently, and I'm thinking,
I get calls or messages or daily from the general voice community here asking about something, whether it's a rates query or it's
because you're the rate whisperer,
an equipment query or anything like and I'm always happy to help. And that's actually one of the reasons that I'm on Facebook at all, because I'm not big on social media. I just don't like it. But I'm on Facebook just to be in those voice groups and, you know, build those communities.
But also what I like about what you've done, I saw a post recently on one of those, because the biggest page, I think, is that Zansi voiceover piece in terms of numbers, or am I wrong?
I don't know numbers offhand.
Okay.
But it is quite, there's a few thousand people on that page, as far as I know.
But I was leading to saying, what I liked is that you formalized it, or you put your a disclaimer saying, if you want a query regarding this, this is how you should approach me. Because at the end of the day, it can wear you out, and that's where I've been in a sense.
So the reason I posted, that post was basically, if you have a query, click this link to book a slot for a consultation. It's free,
but it's scheduled.
It's scheduled, and it'll schedule. It's connected to my calendar because I'm a busy guy. I run a studio. I do my own voice work. I've got bookings all over the place. Ooh. So I can't always answer the phone when you call.
Yeah.
I'll always try to return that call if I can. Mm. Or, you know, if I do answer and I can't speak, I'll say, sorry, man, I'll call you back as soon as I can. And then I will. But, you know, if you schedule a consult with me, and you can do that on the link, it's Calendly/Big Mouth Studios. Mm. Schedule a time with me. You can use that to book a VO consult for marketing advice, for demos, for help with VoiceMe, whatever. Just to chat if you want, but schedule it.
So it's Calendly. Is it Calendly? And then the
calendly.ly/Big Mouth Studios. Yeah.
Andrew Sutherland, ladies and gentlemen, on the VoiceOver Plug.
Thank you very much for having me, Chili.
And that was the VoiceOver Plug with Chilu Lemba. Catch Chilu on social media using the handle @ChiluLemba. And if you haven't checked out his memoir, Finding My Voice, get it as an audiobook on Audible and ebook or paperback on Amazon.